Hello, I'm Charlie Cesera, and welcome to the Coach's Voice CV Spaces podcast. Each week on a Monday at 5:30, we're joined by two highly qualified coaches live on Twitter Spaces. That's where we dissect one of the most interesting tactical points from the weekend's action, as well as sharing coaching advice and insights with our audience. This week, we're joined by Aston Villa women's head coach, Carla Ward, and Leicester City's under-18s head coach, Adam Barrowdale, and we'll be analysing Middlesbrough's big FA Cup win at Manchester United and discuss coaching amid block. Carla, how's it going? How's your season been so far?
I'm good, thank you. Good to be on. Thanks for having me, first and foremost. Yeah, it's been an interesting season. I think, obviously, coming, it inherited quite a number of bodies, and then we had a good start. We dipped a little bit before Christmas. We've readjusted after Christmas, and yeah, certainly performances are picking up, so which is good. Disappointing one last night, though, I'm not going to lie. So, yeah, tough one to take today, but no, we'll keep building, and we're on the right path, that's for sure.
Adam, how are you? And how's your weekend been?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Charlie. Once again, thanks for having me on, and really privileged to be asked to come on a podcast like yourself. But yeah, weekend was good. We played Arsenal at the weekend, so always a good fixture and a good challenge playing such a prestigious academy as themselves.
Okay, let's get into this week's conversation. We're going to talk a bit about some of the games. I know the guys have been really busy over the weekend, so haven't been able to see too much of the action because they've been working hard themselves. But I wanted to, before we go on to talk about the mid-block, Adam, I wanted to ask a bit about the Manchester United-Middlesbrough game on Friday night. Obviously, a really good result for Middlesbrough, but of what have you seen? What did you make of that game?
I've done a little bit of research from the game, having looked back at some of the highlights, and yeah, just looking at obviously a change of formation that obviously Man United employed. They looked at a 4-2-2-2, and they've moved a little bit away from that to like a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 hybrid. But yeah, a lot of obviously dominated the game. They got 67% possession. It was interesting to see the connections between the players, what they were looking to do. The rotations, obviously, between Sancho, Fernandes and Shaw, looking to obviously bring them to the sides, Middlesbrough, and then switch the play, overload one side of the pitch and then switch the play. So that was interesting to see some of the pass maps from that game, and look at the amount of connections between them three players was interesting. I think Man United had expected goals of 4.2, so a huge amount of chances within the game, and but yeah, ultimately just didn't create finish their chances. But another interesting stat for me was 53% of the possession was combination play in the central third. So a huge emphasis of obviously trying to overload the central areas and trying to play through Middlesbrough.
Love that you're bringing the stats, Adam. Is that something that you concentrate within your role, like getting into the stats and sort of using that data to always improve?
Yeah, with the under-18s, obviously, we use the stats. We've got the individual stats that we look at, but also the game model stats that we try and work with the boys on. I work very closely with our analyst who does a lot of work around the stats and around the game model on that. So when I always look at a game, obviously you're trying to analyse what the teams are doing in and out of possession and also on transitions, but I think to bring the stats into gives you another layer of detail that you can work to.
Good stuff. And Carla, I want to ask the same question really while we're talking about the stats, but how do you use data?
To be honest with you, until I went to Villa, probably didn't use that much of it. And then there was the analysis guy when I came in who was very data driven, which obviously massively helped. But it's interesting, you just said then around the combinations in that mid third. If you look at the way Wilder sets his teams up, actually, he's nullified that central space quite a lot. So if we're talking about, yeah, Manchester United have dominated, but actually the way that Wilder set his team up to nullify that central space, he's, you know, they haven't created too much from there. So No, it's interesting. And yeah, you go back to the data side of it. Certainly now it's more the data, it's data driven on and off the pitch. And I think even now we're looking at players for the summer. We're linking the way we want to play to data, as well as obviously getting out and scouting and analysing ourselves. But certainly from, say, a sporting director point of view, the one thing they'll be looking at is data. And if we want to sign a player, we have to back it up.
Yeah, it's a massive part of the game now, isn't it? We've recently done a piece with Notts County when we worked with their analysts, and that's going to be coming out soon. But really interesting to see how they use that and how they prepare their sessions. And yeah, that's going to come out very soon. But just on Manchester United, Carla, I wanted to ask, what have you made of them? Obviously, they changed head coach with Solskjaer and Ragnik. Do you think they've improved under Ragnik of what you've seen?
I mean, statistically, that you would have to argue yes, slightly. I think there's always a point, you know, us coaches will say it all the time, if they've had a couple of managers now in a short period of time, so at what point do players have to start looking at themselves? You know, they've got some quality players, they've got young, they've got experienced players, they've got it all for me, and they're a team that realistically that squad should be competing. So they've started to pick up. I think the way that he sets them up, the high energy, front-footed football. And realistically, let's be honest, that's the way Manchester United should play. If you're talking about Man United, we're talking about one of the biggest clubs in world football, arguably the biggest club in world football. So if you're going to wear that shirt, you've got to be able to deliver. And if you're going to coach a team like Manchester United, you've got to play in a way that suits their history and their heritage. So I think he's come in, he's tried to adopt that sort of style. Naturally, it takes time when you go in with a new group of players. You've immediately got to get them on side. So I think he's doing a good job. But it'd be really interesting to see who's next for them.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there, especially statistically. They came in, they had a really, really strong first half. Obviously, missed the penalty, hit the crossbar. But I think Borough defended really well and exploited some of the space in the second half. So one thing we wanted to talk about today was obviously the mid-block. I wanted to give a shout-out to Kidderminster against West Ham. I thought they'd done unbelievable, denying them of any space. And again, Boreham Wood last night. Incredible achievement going to Bournemouth and getting through. So let's talk about this mid-block. And Adam, for the layman like me, could you explain for anyone who doesn't know what a mid-block is?
Yeah, it's defending the middle section of the pitch, probably with the key concept being preventing the opposition's playing through you. So really denying the space in between the lines, and making sure the units are tight together, the distances between the units, and players dropping into a block defensive shape. I had a look through some of the main shapes that teams used when employing a mid-block, and it's 4-5-1, 4-1-4-1, 5-3-2, 5-2-3. They're a lot of the shapes, and ultimately that is really the basic line of it. The defensive line, usually 20 yards out from your own 18-yard box, so you are leaving some space in behind for the opposition to penetrate, but really, really defending that mid-third of the pitch and being compact enough to not allow the opposition to pick up pockets of space to play through you. Usually trapping on the outside, ensuring teams don't go on the outside to come back in to then play through you. But a lot of discipline between individuals and connections between the unit to ensure players aren't jumping at the wrong time. So ultimately, that is kind of the basics of what a mid-block is.
I like it. Yeah, really good description there. And Carla, what are the key characteristics for players when they're playing in that mid-block? What do they need to have to do it effectively?
Do you know what? I think number one has got to be discipline. If you're not disciplined and you come out of your shape straight away, gaps will open up and oppositions can play through. And I think it's one of those, you have to stay connected in your units, not just, you know, horizontally, but vertically as well. And you've got to make sure you stay compact. It's one that, it's interesting, we allude to a mid-block as a negative way of playing where actually, I would argue that you could also use it as your first line of attack, because ultimately it might be that you you set up an attacking strategy where you might want to draw the opposition onto you, then to exploit space being behind. So if you've got attacking players with a lot of pace, then you might be quite happy for them to step onto you. For them, when you win the ball back, you can look to counter quickly through those wide areas or through pacing final third. So yeah, it's an interesting one of how you use it, I think, and who uses it and when you adopt it. But I think number one and the key characteristics you need is staying disciplined, and then understanding when you can jump, when you can come out of your hole, when you stay in your shape, to be able to then go and break.
Carla, just on that, if you're going to use it to counter-attack, you need speed in your front line. But also, because you're not dropping too deep, you've still got space in behind that the opposition can exploit. So really, the two key things in terms of individual player characteristics is probably speed on the front line and speed in your back line to play a mid-block, I would say.
I wouldn't necessarily wholeheartedly agree with that. I think, yeah, in the front line potentially, but the back line, I think if you understand triggers and movements of when you're going to step, when you're going to drop, then ultimately, you know, everyone wants quick players nowadays. Let's be honest, everyone wants quick players all over the pitch. But if you're talking about a mid block and you know there's a trigger, head goes down and there's no pressure on the ball, potentially you might have to drop and nullify the space in behind, then you've got intelligent players that might not have the pace, but actually they'll know when to drop and kill that space. So yes, whilst I do appreciate that you want quick players, is it a given to employ a quality mid block? I would argue no.
Yeah, no, it's good. I like that. That's a good point. One thing I was going to ask Adam, and you mentioned the distances. I went to I had the pleasure of going to Watford versus Burnley on the weekend, and obviously Roy Hodgson's come in and played 4-4-2, and you can clearly see the strict defensive work he's put in, and already got that clean sheet. But with the distances, how do you work that? What is the distance between the defence and midfield, and how would you say you would kind of train the team to be disciplined to keep that distance?
Yeah, I think it's just working on the training pitch, Charlie, and working on it in match situations, working against a possession-based approach where individually you're looking how to press, where you're forcing opponents, the technical detail on your body position, your use of your body, how close you get to opponents. But yeah, in terms of the distances between the units, I think it's more of a synergy between the units is most important. And Carla was saying, like, you can't just have players jump out. You've got to have, when one goes, the next one behind has to go, and everyone has to tie in to really make the mid-block work. But yeah, in terms of practices, a lot of phase of plays, a lot of game-based practices where you're working on the distance between the units, when to slide, when to screen, when to step, when to drop, really getting that connection between the units. And yeah, almost like midfielders doing two jobs, really. When they can jump and press on, when they can screen and block passing lines.
Nice one. And Carla, have you got any experience implementing a mid-block?
Yeah, I think if anyone saw, obviously, where I was last season, I was at Birmingham, and we had an uphill task, I'd probably call it, so being polite. So we adopted a mid-block most weeks, well, mid to low block, and it's one of those that consistently, every day in training, it was around out of possession, how we could nullify the space. And to be honest, most of our practices were how could we get our entire team defending across three zones rather than five. And to be honest, even at Villa this season, against your top teams, against anyone in the top three, whilst we might press from restarts, actually, we played a large part in a mid-block, which we would set up every session, like I said, trying to defend across three zones, making sure everyone's compact. If one steps out, can we squeeze the space in behind? Because we know these top teams have got quality central midfielders. And like I said earlier, it depends sort of what team you're coming up against. But if you've got players in the middle of the park that can dominate the game, you want to stop them getting on the ball. And certainly a mid-block will help you do that. So it's just repetition on the training pitch, small areas, bigger areas, 11v11 areas, albeit we didn't have 11v11 last year. But what we did have is willing bodies that were ready to play in that system.
Good stuff. And Adam, I think everyone gets excited about the teams who are playing the hard pressing. But are there any teams currently that you think are quite consistent and effective with their mid block?
It's going back to last season a little bit, but I remember watching Unai Emery's Villarreal, and they did it very well. They played here in pre-season at the King Power, and I think they employed a 4-4-2 mid-block, and I know they've done it in a 4-1-4-1 at times. And yeah, watching his teams do it, I think it'll be a good one for myself and other coaches to observe some of the tactical detail in how they employ the mid-block. So yeah, for me, probably Villarreal from last year have done it at times very well.
Yeah, really good suggestion. I remember the Europa League final, of course, against Manchester United. Mm. They kept them at bay well. Okay, we've got some coaches listening, so hopefully now people have got their notepads at the ready. But Carla, is there any, whether it's coaching advice or training drills, that you could recommend to help improve a team playing in a mid block?
I think you've got to do compact drills, whether it's a rondo where one steps out, the rest squeeze round. I mean, we do quite a lot of 3v3 work where, well, 4v3, 3v3 or 4v4. One, if you're at the team in possession, the team in possession keep four bodies on the pitch. The team out of possession drops one out. So straight away, you're defending outnumbered. But what it does allow you to do is you've got to be disciplined. You've got to communicate. You've got to make sure you nullify the space, squeeze together. Because ultimately, you've got to delay and allow your bodies to get back in. So we do a lot of it, whether it's, like I said, rondo-based, small-sided-based. But everything has got to be around compact distances and discipline on the ball.
Adam, obviously, if you're coming up against a mid-block, have you got any kind of coaching methods or anything you can recommend for playing against a mid-block?
Yeah, it's just your spacing. Obviously, depends what formation you're playing against or what you're coming up against. But if it's if they're a 4-4-2 mid-block, it's about your positioning of your players, where you're positioning them in between the lines and in the pockets, when they're moving into the pockets, when players are moving out of pockets and kind of filling them with other players. But obviously in possession, it's how you draw in the mid block out. Are you stepping in with the ball? Are you using bounce passes? When are you getting them to press? Are you moving the ball to the outside of the pitch to kind of move that block to then move it back centrally to penetrate through? And if there's no pressure on the ball and they are holding that mid block, it's can you exploit with runs in behind as well? So, yeah, these would be the type of principles I would use when coming up against a mid block.
We did have one tweeted in for Carla. Let me just get it up. Just ask Carla about your ambitions with Villa and onwards, really.
Yeah, it's a good question. So when I came in, I was tasked with the job of, exceeding last year's points total and ensuring sort of, we could escape that relegation scrap early. So the target is 16 points from a club point of view. However, my ambition is greater. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm ambitious. So I want to kick on. So I think for me, it's about finishing as high up the table as possible. You know, we've got a run of games, not just now, but, you know, if you have a look at our run in, we've set a points total that we want to try and achieve. But certainly, you know, we've got to be looking to better last year's first and foremost. But for me, past this season, we've got to be realistic as well that we're still season two of the WSL journey for the football club. So we're still building, you know, I think another transfer window will be there with what we want and to be able to kick on and get to where we want to get to. But at the moment, it's about working with what we've got. We've brought in some good quality players that I believe can help us. We've got some unbelievable youngsters coming through as well. So it's about getting the right balance now and ensuring we kick on next season. But yeah, for this season, I think it was clear, 16 points to obviously secure consolidation as early as possible.
And how has the club been as a whole? I don't know. Obviously, Stephen Gerrard's come in from the men's side, but are you seeing in the women's game with Villa getting that support? Are the crowds getting bigger?
Yeah, look, I think from a football club point of view, I can honestly say I've never worked for a better football club. From top to bottom, they support you. We've got a fantastic academy. We've got exceptional staff on and off the pitch. So support from the top is there, even in this last transfer window. Christian Perko played a very, very big part in bringing Jill in. So they're really, really supportive. With regards to the fan base, whilst the crowds aren't as big, what I can say is we've got a Aston Villa supporter group, which quite honestly have been absolutely sensational this season. They've been home and away. You hear them consistently. I remember at Leicester only a couple of weeks ago, I think there was over 1,000 people then. We had a small chunk of Villa fans, and I can honestly say they outsung a large majority of the Leicester fans throughout. So sorry, by the way, Adam, I apologise. but no, the Villa fans have been absolutely brilliant. So I'm at a great club with great bases, great support, and really good fans. So yeah, couldn't be happier right now, to be honest.
That's great to hear. Looking forward to seeing how you get on. And Adam, how is everything in terms of... One thing I was interested to know in terms of Leicester and obviously the new training ground, but that philosophy running through the whole club, how has that been working for you?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think the training ground's an unbelievable facility to work at, and we're very fortunate to work in such a building and environment every day. But yeah, in terms of the strand and how we play, it certainly runs from top to bottom. And I think anyone who watched our under-23s against Everton on Friday night, you would see that. If you came and watched our youth teams play, under-18s and any lower academy teams, you can certainly see how we want to play. We want to be a possession-based team. We want to be aggressive out of possession and press from the front and dominate games in and out of possession. So, yeah, you certainly can see that strand all the way through.
Carla, we've had from Chris. As a coach, is there much you can do about to help a team avoid making mistakes, or is this out of the coach's control?
Well, it's a good question, because we've had many, we've had quite a few of them this year. Look, you can analyse them, and I think that question might be alluded to last night. Obviously, there was a couple of errors which ultimately cost us. But look, you have to, first and foremost, stick together. You have to get back in. You have to analyse it. You have to get out on the training pitch and try and do the best you can to make sure that that doesn't happen again. But certainly, it is a difficult one, because, look, we're in a high-pressure league and players in moments. You can only do a certain amount with the players on the training pitch, but there's moments in games that players have to try and manage. But, yeah, like I said, we can analyse it. We can get them out on the pitch. We can try and rectify it. But ultimately, mistakes happen. We know that. It's just trying to make sure that those mistakes are few and far between rather than as often as potentially they have been recently.
That's it for this week's episode. But if you are a coach yourself, you may be interested in our very own coach education platform, CV Academy. Aimed at coaches at all levels of the game, it helps them develop through premium coach-focused content delivered by a growing network of elite academy and grassroots coaches. You'll find loads of great content on there, including our latest Breaking Lines and Passing Forward coaching course at Sunderland with Elliot Dickman, who has since joined Newcastle. We're also giving listeners to CV Spaces or the podcast 50% off the first month when you sign up to CV Academy. All you need to do is use the discount code CV Spaces when you reach the checkout. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back next week with more top-level coaches analysing the biggest talking points in the elite game and sharing the best coaching practices, advice and insights. If you want to join the next CV Spaces Live, then drop us a follow on Twitter at Coaches Voice. Another big thank you to our guest speakers, Carla and Adam, and thanks to everyone who listened.